The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
So it's all well and good being the drummer for Duran Duran, but very few people get to be in the top five most eligible bachelors in the UK. Roger Taylor, good morning.
That was a long time ago, by the way.
It's one of those accolades.
20 years ago, I think.
Is it not one of those perpetual trophies? Once you make that ranking, you carry it with you for life.
That's true. I'm really not sure how I got in there. I think they got me mixed up with John, I think. I think it was definitely a mistake there.
It's good company.
My wife had me anyway, so I can't be that bad.
It's good company. You, Prince William, Hugh Grant.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't last long. I got married again shortly after that, so I wasn't on the market for very long.
Well, is it little wonder if you are that eligible, you were always going to be snapped up.
Yeah, exactly.
While you were on the list, did you introduce yourself to people that way? Hello, I am one of the UK's most eligible bachelors.
No, well, Tatler can't. I don't know if they still do, but Tatler used to do this this list every year, you know, to find out who's the most eligible bachelor. And I just happened to have very sadly gone through a divorce the year before, and somehow I popped up on that list. And I don't know why to this day how I got in there.
Every cloud has a silver lining, though. I think that's the lesson.
Exactly.
You guys are going to be playing in Malahide Castle on June 30th and Virgin Media Park in Cork on July 1st. Fingers crossed that you get the weather for it. How is it? I mean, it's now a long time that you are back, but how is the second iteration of being with the guys compared to the first?
It's much calmer. I would say calmer is the word that comes to my mind because, as you know, in the early days, we had a very young audience, which was amazing. We had this teenage audience that were completely infatuated with us. And it was kind of hard to move around because everywhere we went, we had this huge following. They'd be camping outside the hotel and whatever. And that audience has kind of grown with us. And I think we've gathered a different audience as well, a more mature audience. So we can kind of walk around freely now, and it feels very nice having a more mature audience that's thankfully still with us.
Is the adulation nice? Like, is it a good ego stroke when you're getting it, or is it annoying that you find yourself pinned in hotels and having people roaring at you in the streets?
It was great at first, you know, because it's what we wanted. We wanted to be in a pop band. We wanted the band to be as successful as it possibly could be, but then it does kind of get a little bit intrusive. And, you know, I see people now that have that high level of fame, and I kind of feel sorry for them because it does kind of take away a lot of your freedom, you know, where you can't just kind of walk down the street and grab, you know, go into a shoe shop and grab a bottle of wine or whatever. You kind of lose that ability just to do what you want when you want it, and you know, it was a lot to handle, I've got to say, in the early days. But things are definitely, you know, we still get to go out and play our catalogue and play our music, but we don't have to kind of give our whole lives up to it on a daily basis.
There's an occasional off switch now.
Exactly, which is nice, which I think everybody needs that, don't they? Everybody needs that ability to just walk out of their job or, you know, their office or whatever and just put on the off switch. And we have that now, which feels really good.
Am I right in saying that your first go around with the group ended at Live Aid? Was that your last gig?
Yeah, that was my final show with Duran Duran in the original incarnation.
What a gig to go out on.
I believe that went out to about 2 billion people. There's about 100,000 people in the stadium. So it's like, no pressure, guys. You know, the whole world is watching. And that's the last time the original five played together before we reunited in the early 2000s. So talk about going out on a high. That was certainly a big one.
It must be amazing to have whatever about, I mean, the 2 billion audience you can't perceive, but to know that there's 2 billion behind the cameras and 100,000 in the stadium in front of you, do you feel that pressure Or do you just blank it out and focus on what you're playing?
I've kind of learned to blank out that stuff at that point. I mean, a few years before that, I was just playing in my bedroom. I taught myself how to play drums. I didn't have a teacher. I just learned from books and just listening to records. So I went from playing in my bedroom on my own, like 3 years before, to suddenly playing to, you know, these billions of people. So, of course, it was a lot of pressure. And also, the band wasn't in the best place at that time. We'd all kind of gone off in different directions. So we didn't have that kind of inner support for each other that we should have done. So I think it made it even more kind of stressful. When I look back to that gig, I haven't got great memories of it. It's great that we did it, but it was certainly the kind of spiritual end of that first part of Duran Duran.
God, I hadn't realised that the time frame was that tight. I mean, to 3 years from, as you say, bedroom to billion. I mean, that's...
Yeah. It was a very steep ascent, I have to say. We got up there very, very quickly. In fact, I used to really... I was kind of jealous of U2 because they did it very gradually. And, of course, they're another band that's still with us today and still doing it amazingly. But they had this lovely kind of steady ascent through the 80s into the 90s. And I think it made for great longevity. Whereas us, it was kind of like getting on a train and the train was just running away. You know, it was so quick. And I often think it would have been nice if the ascent was a little gentler.
Yeah, because at that point, that means that in 3 or 4 years, you had a couple of US number ones, you had A View to a Kill, so you were the theme to one of the most successful of the Bond movies when the Bond franchise was at a particular peak at that time. You've Live Aid. I mean, presumably, and you're in what? You would barely turn 20, would you?
Yeah, we're all in our early 20s. When I joined Duran, I was 19. Nick was 17. He was the baby of the band. So we'd known nothing else at that point, actually. We hadn't really lived life very much, and this thing was kind of suddenly thrust upon us. It was a kind of a little bit like lighting a campfire and the whole of the forest goes up in flames. That's what it felt like. Crazy times. And I've got to say, I'm much happier today in the calmer existence that we operate in.
Have you ever in the intervening years or after the initial success had a drumming lesson?
I don't think I have, actually. No, I just... my dad was a great believer that you could actually teach yourself anything. And we didn't have the money to go and have lessons. I mean, I've got a son now that's 13, and he's having karate lessons, he's having football lessons, he's having guitar lessons. You know, it's like every lesson under the book. Well, we couldn't afford lessons for anything. So you really had to teach yourself, and that's always been, the ongoing philosophy. I've just always kind of developed my own playing, and I think I've definitely got my own style because of that. I haven't kind of picked up on somebody else's style. So I think we're all the same. Nobody in the band had a lesson between them. I mean, sometimes it might sound like that, we certainly, on a bad night, but it certainly meant that we all had a very individual style that when we all played together, you could tell it was Duran Duran. It was very unique. You know, we kind of put together this amateurish kind of, music that we arranged together, and I think it was very unique because of that.
Have you gone back and either apologized to or expressed gratitude to your family? Because of all of the things to have somebody teach themselves in the house, drums.
Yeah.
Like those first few months must have been hard on everybody.
I still thank my dad today, actually. Unfortunately, my mom passed away. But I thank my dad, because everybody at school wanted to play drums, but I would say 99% of the parents wouldn't allow it.
Exactly.
I was lucky to have parents that did. And also, we used to live in an adjoining semi-detached house, and my drum kit was right next to the neighbor's living room.
Oh, dear God.
And I found out years later that every time I came home from school at 4 o'clock, they'd take all the pictures down off the wall. I'd play for an hour, boom, 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 boom. Then my dad would come back from work and have to stop. And then they put all the pictures back up on the wall. So I'm really grateful to them as well.
Oh, that's some patience. They must be the best neighbors in the
world. They were so good.
So you said that the, excuse me, Roger, that you said that the Live Aid gig, because of tensions in the band, while it was a big thing to do, it wasn't your favorite ever. What was your favorite ever? When you do that, close your eyes in the evening and think back to great moments in Duran Duran, what was the gig that was the pinnacle?
Ooh, there's been so many. But I think going back to the early days, was playing at Madison Square Garden in New York, which I kind of knew as a kid growing up because all the big boxing events were there, like Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. And then Led Zeppelin became very famous for playing there. So then when we got to play Madison Square Garden at the age of 24, I think it was, I mean, that was such a... That was such a real big moment.
What about also, I know it's not a gig, but what about seeing a Bond movie open and having it be your song that is the soundtrack to it? That must be a kick.
That really was. Again, we grew up on Bond movies and, you know, there we were in a very dark and dank Birmingham growing up. There wasn't much glamour, but... You know, we used to watch the Bond movies and that was our escapism. That was, you know, you could dream about being Bond or being something to do with Bond.
And that was great. Wasn't that Christopher Walken and Zorin Enterprises and your song hits as the sort of the blimp takes off at the end? Isn't that it? Or have I constructed that in my head?
I can't quite remember, actually.
Ah, come on. You can't have a soundtrack to a Bond film.
I've certainly not seen it for a few years.
Right.
But I remember Roger Moore was obviously Bond and he was very...
It was Grace Jones, wasn't it? Wasn't Grace Jones the baddie in that one?
Yes, exactly. Grace Jones was in the movie. Yeah. So it's a great move and I think it's still one of the best ones, actually.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely one of Roger Moore's peak ones, and it was back when there was a bit of crack to Bond. Instead of all this,
but it was a great moment, and it was another moment that was completely beyond our wildest dreams. And I hear that Bond theme today, and I think, oh my God, that's my drums on a Bond movie. It's still hard to comprehend, really.
Well, it's not being the top five most eligible Bachelor of 2004 in the UK, but it's not bad.
That's not bad.
Roger, it has been lovely to talk to you. Roger Taylor, drummer for Duran Duran.
Yeah, you too.
And Duran Duran playing Malahide Castle. I don't know if you played Malahide Castle before, but it's an absolutely gorgeous venue, particularly if you get a nice evening for it. So they're playing Malahide Castle June 30th and Virgin Media Park in Cork on July 1st.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.